Ni mana to bata boksa gumba mu ye ye sagara. Kudundu mo marude kudara nyate. Ni mana to bata boksa gumba mu ye ye sagara. Kudundu mo marude kudara nyate. Mane cheje jamano. Nalani sama bopeng segal sinema alam por bi yalla ba ta jojo tof dal man ma war la won repog ji jamono ya me manato bata go sa gumba mu ye sagare koi dundu ma waru re kudare mete.
Africando is Saro from the album Ketukuba, released in 2006. Africando was founded by producer Ibrahima Sila from Cote d'Ivoire and Bonkana Maiga from Mali, who teamed up with salsa musicians from New York and Cuba, Venezuela, Colombia, and even Paris, and vocalists from Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, and Benin. They sing mostly in Wolof, which you just heard, and in Spanish, and sometimes in Fan, the language of Benin. Salsa, people may not know, has been extremely popular in Central and West Africa since the 1940s. And, of course, this is one of my favorite groups. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Tuesday, January the 14th, and it is your day to have your say. That's right. I have gone a little bit off the deep end lately, but I think with good reason. And it's a conversation that will be continued, this pillorying of the team that went to the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, and specifically Dennis Rodman. But we see the increasing attack as they widen the net and draw in. The main thing is to destroy not just Rodman, but former members of the NBA. And there's a reason, and we'll get to that. But this is your day. You occupy the space here. This is a part, I think, of how we grow. We cross-pollinate. We give each other reason to reconsider things. We point things out that have probably not been mentioned. And this is the way we learn from each other. It is a necessary part, I think, of how we turn things around, how we forge relationships, close the gaps that are deliberately placed between and among us, and this is how we tackle it. So let's start. We have here Harvey. Is that right? Harvey, yes. You're on.
Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
My pleasure to be on your show again.
Same here.
I'd like to talk about our energy into the coming new year. It seems that so much of our news is about our climate destabilization and water shortages and so on and so forth. And so I'd like to talk about that briefly. And I think that the way to go into the future is we have these technologies that don't use water. Like right now, coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power are second only to agriculture in their daily use of our fresh water resources, and this cannot be sustained. So we have the technologies to go forward that don't use water. One of them is photovoltaics, that's light to electricity, our solar panels. But there's also others, like there's piezoelectric, that's spelled P-I-E, like apple pie, P-I-E-Z-O-Z-O, electric, piezoelectric. And that's pressure to electricity. They found that when they bent quartz crystals, that electrons were thrown out of the crystal lattice, and those were made to run a circuit. And now they've developed all these technology around piezoelectricity, pressure to electricity. And then there's thermoelectricity, that's heat to electricity. And there's solid-state devices that when you apply heat, it translates that right into electricity. So we have, and neither of these three, piezo, thermo, or photovoltaic electricity, use any water in the production of electricity. But the next big one, which isn't here yet, is atmospheric electricity harvesting. And that's always been the dream. It turns out that the Earth is like a magnet, and the ionosphere is like another magnet, and they rotate, and it creates a giant dynamo. And I believe this can be tapped into. And before, we didn't have the ability. I think Tesla was into it, but they didn't have the ability. But now we do, especially in the nano world, and perhaps using nano antennas, like fractal-based antennas, nanofractennas, we could trap these electrons and use them to generate electricity. So that would be atmospheric electricity generation. You can Google that. And all this work is being done on that front. And if we can do that, then the world is a natural motor. In fact, the world itself is rotating faster than the atmosphere, creating all this drag. And it also turns out in the ocean, there's a lot of free electrons because of the movement of the water. So that could be harvested too. So that would be the next form of electricity, clean, renewable electricity. And it could, that would be a total abundance, especially with the other two that we already have and are doing great, the piezoelectric, thermoelectric, and the photovoltaic.
Well, thank you. That's a mouthful, but it's really interesting that you open up these ideas and these new pieces of information for people to do more research. I know I'm going to have to do so. I'm going to have to start looking into these things. But thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you, Dree.
Thank you. Hello, Sarah. You're on the air, and I have a message here from someone who writes on leadstories@gmail.com. Hi, Sarah. That's the only message I got. Hi, Sarah.
Greetings to you, Utrice, and greetings
Hello.
To the yes, ma'am, and greetings to the PRN audience. And we have Harvey, the environmentalist, putting out some good information.
Yes, indeedy.
Yes, ma'am. But Utrice, my topic for discussion today is I'm going to piggyback on you what you were talking about on yesterday with North Korea, Dennis Rodman, and the tearing down of these black men in the media. Utrice, I very seldom talk about my military career, but myself and my husband, in 1990, we were both stationed in Korea in the military. My husband was stationed on the DMZ. And I was stationed in Seoul, Korea, because we chose to do an unaccompanied tour to do 1 year instead of doing the joint tour, which would have put us there for two. So on the weekends, I would take the bus and ride up there to visit with him, or he would come down to Seoul whenever he was not in the field or doing things that normally is being done. And when I said on the DMZ, he was on the very last outpost where you can stand on the Korean side of the border, and you can look across and see the towers where the North Koreans are manning the barbed wire fence and everything over there. You can look right across and see into North Korea. So I know of what I'm speaking of when I'm talking about the DMZ. What has happened with Dennis Rodman and all of these pundits who like to get on TV and want to tear these men down, telling them what they need to do? As you put it, these men are not U.S. diplomats. They're not employed by the State Department. They went out there to do a goodwill tour. as you talked about with all of these other people out here from the Al Gore and these reporters, as you mentioned on yesterday, Laura Ling, I believe, was one of them, who stepped across the border from China into North Korea and was taken in by them and in prison. These people did that on purpose because we can't forget Al Gore and his role when he had Current TV and what he was doing with Current TV. We don't know all of the finaglings that went on with them before it was sold and was bought over by Al Jazeera. So these reporters that went over there, as I said previously, these people always like to go dancing on the edge of the wire, doing things that they know is detrimental to the United States, and I believe they do it on purpose, as they have done in North Korea. They have done it in Iran and all these other places where they know the U.S. have issues, and they do it in order to create problems. They do it on purpose. As you said, if Jimmy Carter does not want to get himself involved in what's going on over there, Jimmy Carter has to be more aware. Jimmy Carter is a former head of state, a president, the leading humanitarian. If he does not want to step out on the wire and get involved with Kenneth Bay, then that should tell me that you need to go after Jimmy Carter. You need to ask him why it is that he don't want to do anything to get this man released from the North Koreans, because apparently what he was doing was totally illegal and it had to do with something with U.S. foreign policy and U.S. intelligence. That's why Jimmy Carter is not getting himself involved. But yet still, this Chris Cuomo, who is another flunky, because he was not doing well when he left ABC 2020 and he got sucked up by CNN, as you said, who were trying to get their ratings out of the toilet because they're trying to compete with Fox to see who's going to come in second place, first or second place. And they've been totally off the mark because all of these hatchet jobs that they did with these young men to have them to turn on each other, to cannibalize each other, to try and save themselves, this is what they intend to do all along while he sat back on his laurels and enjoyed. As you said, his father and his brother in New York, they have a history of it. And I wish you would touch on it somewhat today at the end of the dialogue, if you can touch on what they have been doing in New York. And now all of a sudden, he's going to try and redeem himself on TV, trying to get his ratings out of the slump, trying to use Dennis Rodman and these other players in order, as usual, black people are always the whipping post that everybody has tried to use to step on in order when their career starts faltering. We got to find somebody black. We got to demonize them in order to make ourselves look good in the eyes of the public. And that's what they have been doing. Piers Morgan has been doing the same thing by getting these men. John McCain, I even heard that old fool on the news, talking about it. Now, here is this criminal. You know, here is this criminal for what he did in Vietnam. He's getting up here talking his 2 cents about Dennis Rodman. Why the heck don't you do it? You former Mr. Prisoner of War and Mr. Former Military, why don't you do it? Why don't you get on over there and negotiate with the North Koreans? Because y'all are the ones who split the country in two. The United States is the one who split that country in two. Them North Koreans didn't do that. It's the United States with their own foreign policy that did it the same way they did Vietnam.
Well, you know, the thing here, too, is, and I'm going to talk about this, I just want to give the listeners a platform today without, you know, using their time to opine, as it were. But I will be talking about, you know, the connecting certain dots that need to be connected here. But thank you, Sarah. Thanks so much for your contribution today.
You're so welcome, Utrecht.
Thank you. We're on to Clara from Philadelphia.
Hello, Utrecht.
Hello, Clara. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for letting me on. I want to follow up also with the on your discussion last week about that program you watched. I want to take a little different approach to it. I thought that when I heard, I don't use TV, so I had to go totally on what you told us, and I listened to your recording. I guess it was. Of what was going on that show. And I listened very carefully to what you were saying. I believe for years that TV is a dangerous medium because it actually plays with your mind. It has little dots in the TV on the screen, actually, called mesmers. And it can confuse you in terms of what you're watching and interfere with clear thinking. And I think that some of that was going on when you were watching it. I think you became so emotional over this theater, and that's what it was, that you saw something that really wasn't there. Now, this is the way I see it. You said that the men on the screen, the ten men, were sitting there as if they were imprisoned. You associated them, you compared them with prisoners on the docket. Those men, and I think that you saw what the media wanted you to see. That's my connection there. Those men were there, all there of their free will. They may have felt like prisoners, but only in their minds they were prisoners. They didn't have to remain there. They didn't, once respected by the host. The fear you saw on their faces, I think, was generated not by the host, but by their own perception of their powerlessness. I think that Cuomo's attitude was true to form. Actually, it's what do you expect? It's Fox. It's totally predictable. His behavior was more obnoxious than usual because now he feels at this point in our history, he's more apt to get away with it for a number of reasons. I think Rothman's behavior makes him an easy target, easier than most, because of the image he's assumed for himself. He's incorporated kind of a persona of the bizarre, element of the bizarre, and people, you know, in general, people react differently to that than ordinary-looking people. I think all of it was about money. All the 11 people, including Cuomo, are on there for the money, and I think that they feed into each other. The media loves people like Ross. It meets their needs. His needs are being met by the money and the attention. And as far as there's another side that I was thinking of, and that's the behavior of the guests. Cuomo didn't have to get away with it. He could have been managed in such a way as to be revealed as the fool he is. If any one of those men, I know if I'd been there, I would have stood up. I wouldn't have taken it, and I would have apologized not to Cuomo, but to Rothman. I have to leave. This is not the agenda. I did not come here prepared. None of us came here prepared for this. We have attempted to keep him on it, and he's insisted on something else. I, as an individual, am leaving. Anyway.
No, I think, take your point.
Can I say one?
Finish. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say one. They made a big mistake. See, when you go into the lion's den, you have to be prepared. They could have prepared themselves for this. And because they didn't take maybe a few days to prepare, now they have to suffer with years of financial losses. And this is the way I see it. I mean, we have to be prepared. This is enemy territory.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct on that.
Can I say one more thing about how to do it? I have seen an excellent video involving Charlie Rose and President Assad. It's a masterpiece. In this video, President Assad, without even showing any anger, he was just so classy, he revealed Charlie Rose to be the pathetic, sycophant, that's what he is. He was masterful, and we can learn from him. Google Charlie Rose and President Assad.
It's a very interesting interview, no question about it. I saw it. And, of course, you're talking to a head of state who grew up in milieu where this is a necessary skill. This is necessary knowledge. You must know how to manage, especially the Western media, which almost never comes to a discussion as a purely independent thing. The discussion is usually to fulfill some kind of contract, whether written or understood, implicit, with to please the United States. They literally take on the mantle of diplomacy themselves. Charlie Rose was not just a journalist. He was there actually and this happens a lot when they go to other countries, acting as if he is also a head of state. So this is the kind of boldness that they exercise when they go to countries they presume are powerless, or certainly less powerless than the United States. It's a kind of arrogance, but that's what they do. The interview with Rodman by Cuomo clearly suggested to me, I don't know, I haven't been able to verify it, but it clearly suggested to me that they were there, despite the fact that they were all there, the CNN mic'd up only Charles Smith and Dennis Rodman. All of the men were not mic'd up. So it was understood they therefore controlled who was going to speak. And it suggested to me that they had made an arrangement, at least on Rodman's side, they were there to discuss from their perspective what this trip was about. That was what was said. That was the understanding. And that was what was posted on the screen, that they are discussing their trip to the DPRK and discussing basketball diplomacy. That was what was agreed to. And then Cuomo decided, as many, I've seen hustlers in the media do this before, they just kind of mug you on camera because they believe it's live television, and they have you by the throat, and no matter what the reaction in that moment for that interview, the assumption is they will always have the last word. Because after the interview, you're gone, and they have you to feast upon as a corpse for as long as they desire. So people like Rodman are a bit naive, very naive, about how the media can actually cause you to be devoured, and they are the instigators of it. CNN instigated this thing to a level I have not seen in years. Well, and the fact that nobody within CNN exercised or has cared to exercise some degree of restraint, the fact that the world of media, no journalism organization, no prominent journalists have stepped out to say, guess what? This is not what our profession is supposed to look like and do, and we object to it. Nobody has issued any kind of reprimand on this wholesale. This is wholesale, one-sided attack, and it is really clear what it is, why they're doing it. Absolutely. Your point is very well taken.
I just want to say one more thing about what...
Okay, because we have a long line. We do have a long line.
They at least would have had their dignity had they stood up. And as far as letting the networks know how we feel, the only way to do is stop watching that trash. That's the only way. We
I
have
agree.
To opt out.
Thank you so much,
thank
Clara.
You.
Thank
Bye.
You. We go to New York. Patricia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
This hello, Patricia.
Hello. This is where the role of black media becomes critical, because although the presence of black media does not necessarily guarantee that we will have someone to counterbalance what is presented in the general media, sometimes black media is progressive and can share information in a different vein. So, for example, after you gave us all of that valuable information last week, I went online and I went into three different internet sites. I went into CNN, into the Chris Cuomo piece. I went into Fox Sports News to respond to David Stern, who's the commissioner of basketball. And then I also went into the article where Bill Richardson had stated that Dennis Rodman's visit was ill-advised. And I commented on each one of those three sites. I watched my comments posted. And then as I went from one site to the next but came back to the previous one, I noticed that my comments had disappeared. It was almost immediate. Maybe a few seconds had passed between going to one site to comment and coming and returning to the other site. So even when you try to protect people who are considered vulnerable, certainly now I have learned, the lesson I have learned, is that making critical comments on these sites does not guarantee that you can protect the person who is considered vulnerable. And so we now have to try and figure out a different way to respond to what Chris Cuomo has done, because making comments on these internet sites clearly is not the way to go.
Okay. We heard from another listener. I heard from another listener yesterday along those same lines, and I did respond to her saying, well, it's good that she made the effort. And she also raised a question on my Facebook page, should we start some kind of a protest ourselves? And that is a question I leave open to the listeners. Should that be done?
I would absolutely think that that should be done. And I remember, John Carlos from the 1968 Olympics. And the same thing happened to him. He was left out there. He and the other athletes were left out there by themselves. And as you very clearly state, you isolate people, then you demonize them, and then you go in for the kill. And as you know, John Carlos was never able to recover. Never.
Mm-hmm.
So this cannot be just left out there. Rodman and the other players cannot believe that everyone believes in concert that what they did was wrong. There has to be a pushback. I just don't know how. I just don't know the form of that pushback. But there has to be a visible pushback and a visible response.
Thank you. Thank you, Patricia, for that. Thanks a lot. We should take these things, by the way, under very serious consideration, as I am. I really am. Thanks a lot. All right. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you.
You know, Utrice, I must say that, you know, I'm being quite entertained by the people over there at MSNBC with this whole Christie thing. You know, it's just amazing how you have certain individuals who try to make excuses for this man when it seems, if you look and analyze the facts of this incident, the man is absolutely guilty. He knows what happened. He was behind it happening. And it's just mind-boggling how they look to make these type of excuses about, well, he didn't do it. But if you look at the pattern of behavior and the things that was done, the cancellation of meetings and things of that nature when he wasn't being endorsed by certain Democratic members of the state legislature, it just amazes me. But the thing that annoys me the most about it is that they set aside all other news that is important to the American public, like what's going on with the extension of unemployment, which affects millions of people in this country, and all of these other things that are also happening, to deal and address this one man who it seems to be is nothing more than a bully and a control freak. But
well,
they
you know,
never talk.
I want to
talk about one thing.
Uh-huh.
About, from what I've been observing, now I may be wrong, but I don't see any people of color within his administration. And nobody has even addressed that yet.
But still, you have arrived at a point of view, and you're entitled to it, but you yourself said it's based literally on your feeling. You know, you haven't had any, there's no smoking gun yet that you have been able to locate. So you do have to give some wiggle room here until you actually, I'm glad that you're putting pieces together for yourself, and that's how most of us, we kind of come to our conclusions. But to say that you know exactly what the deal is and that he is absolutely guilty until you get the smoking gun, aren't you just aren't you ahead of things here? Aren't you just precluding any possibility that you might be wrong?
Well, you know, Utrecht, I would say based on the history and other incidents of this kind and the type of personality that he has and me being in similar situations and having a certain degree of power to do certain things with underlings being able to do it and me being able to sit slightly in the background, I would be more inclined to say he's guilty.
I was hoping you would say I am inclined to believe that he is guilty.
I'm inclined to believe.
That's good. All right. Well, that is at least a better thing than he's absolutely guilty. I am inclined to believe.
You know how inclined goes. Have a good day, Utrecht.
Okay,
and it's
going to
be
you.
Interesting how it's going to play out. And when will you talk about Detroit again?
Oh, very shortly. Very soon. Some very interesting things have been happening there. So we'll get to Detroit.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too, Jay. Thanks so much. We'll go to Louisiana now. Shelby, you're on the air.
Hey, Sister Latrice, how you doing?
I'm okay, Shelby. How you doing?
Great. I just want to say that I have a videotape of you when you were at the Slave Theater with Brother Alton Maddox.
Oh, yeah? That goes back a ways.
Yeah. You gave a lecture there, Reading Between the Lies.
That's right.
That was your lecture. My mom let me see that when I was younger. And, you know, when Sister Sarah told me to listen to your show, and as soon as I heard your voice, I immediately knew when I first heard your voice.
Oh.
That was amazing. I really enjoyed that lecture. Now, I looked up your history, and you really follow some amazing Trinidadians there with George Patmos and C.L.R. James and H. Sylvester Williams.
That's right. George Patmos, C.L.R. James. Yes.
Yeah, those were some amazing people. But I don't have anything specific that I want to say. I just want to say in general, I really appreciate you allowing us to follow your thinking and to encourage us to not accept what people tell us.
Thank you for that.
To kind of look deeper below the surface. You have a good way of comparing and contrasting. For example, one group can do one thing and they're arrested and imprisoned, and another group can do the exact same thing and the outcomes are different.
Yes.
So the Philharmonic
going to the DPRK, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not into the specifics. I'm just into the general concept of being able to compare and contrast, being able to use the history to see exactly what people have done to us in the past and be able to predict with some degree of certainty how these people are going to treat us in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You have, because one of the things that John Henry Clark said was like, a people to its history is like the relationship between a mother and a child. If you separate that child from its mother, it's completely lost. And I think to a certain extent, we as a people, we've been separated from our history, and not, I would say it was done deliberately on purpose it's like amnesia. When you get amnesia, you know, you can't even orient yourself anymore. You can't even understand what you're allergic to. So I think having a sound historical understanding of our relationship with these European people is very critical. And and it's going to help us be able to deal with them effectively.
Well, so thank you so
that's
much.
That's my point. So I appreciate your conversation. I'll listen to the rest of the show.
I thank you so much for your call, and I thank you for remembering reading between the lies.
Okay. Have a nice day, ma'am. Okay.
Thanks bye-bye. So much. Take care. We go to Brooklyn. Eric, you're on the air.
I'm enjoying the show. It's a wonderful show.
Thank you so much. It's because of the wonderful people who participate in the show.
Absolutely. And I'm really happy about Clara. I'm thinking along the same lines. You know, as I was, I saw Rodman, a little piece by Rodman on YouTube last year, and it was about his trip to North Korea and his relationship with the leader. And, you know, in that piece, he was so articulate. He was angry about the way President Obama has failed, you know, black people, especially in this country, and his attitude towards the rest of the world, especially these demonized countries. And, you know, I thought it was really impressive. I was impressed by that. So when I saw the way that these people acted, the way that these black men acted, you know, in front of one white guy who was obviously all about propaganda, who was obviously talking about nonsense, I felt like it was really a shame. And I feel like, you know, once again, the impotence, you know, if you can see the image, the impotence of black men is revealed in those kind of settings where, you know, you're on a huge stage and you make a fool of yourself. You go there unprepared. We know our history. You know our history. If you listen to what Rodman said, you know, last year, he should have been aware that regardless of what you do, it's a political thing to be in North Korea. You know, it's a political thing. You can't get away from it. Now, your approach to that political thing is that you want to show the humanitarian aspect and the relational aspect where you're connecting people and you're bringing joy to people and you're humanizing a dehumanized people and a dehumanized country. But, you know, you can't come on this stage and they're pressing you with these questions, with these nonsensical questions. These weren't hard to answer, you know. And you make a fool of yourself, and you start apologizing as if you have something to apologize. Oh, we're not apologizing about what we're doing. We're apologizing, you know, about the fact that you're asking the political question. You're off the topic. Why are you apologizing for that? You know? So when I saw that, I was really, you know, disturbed by the fact that, once again, on a huge stage, you have 10 black men with power. These are people with money, they should have a lot of money because they made money, more money than most of us will see, you know? So they're not begging on this stage. They're there to provide information. Now, if the host doesn't want the information, like Clara said, they should have gotten up and left. Or they should have been prepared enough to address the questions that were being asked in the same way that Muhammad Ali was prepared, and he made all of those people look foolish. You know, when they challenged his position, he made them look foolish. And the whole world saw it on those stages. That's so, you know, when I see these things, I think instead of focusing on Chris Cuomo and CNN, you know, who are obviously another propaganda arm of this government, you know, what we should focus on is how do we get young people or athletes who get on these stages, you know, information that will empower them. I think they should study Muhammad Ali and see the way, you know, I mean, Malcolm X, another one who was always on the stage, but when you're pressed, you address the situation, you address the question so cleverly, you know, so simply, that there's no denying your humanity, and you turn, you know, the ridicule back to Cuomo. because obviously he's a fool, but now he's empowered because you want to release all your power to him. He doesn't deserve it.
There is nothing that you have said so far, Eric, that can be disputed. No question about it. It was shameful. It was sad. It was a kind of group embarrassment that we feel looking at that interview. However, we also must be really clear that of that the greater issue is not Dennis Rodman's behavior. I mean, it was what it was, and there's no need to dress up what it was. It was quite sad to see. But that too we have to take into account, as we also, because the host is also responsible for that. The conduct of an interview is also the responsibility of the host. I would not allow somebody on the program, for example, to reach a point of such self-embarrassment that you just, you know, it actually does a great injury to listeners. We're interested in, like, if anybody on this program should go off and, you know, say something ridiculous. As a host, just to maintain the integrity of my program, I would not want that to happen on my program, because it reduces me as a journalist and as a host. My responsibility is to maintain a certain standard on my program.
No, you treat. There is no integrity.
I get your point. It's
about propaganda. So if you
exactly,
like Dennis,
I get it.
Say if you understand,
I get your point. I'm saying I don't disagree with anything. I'm not disagreeing with anything that you have said. You are absolutely correct. However, even so, the greater. Injury was caused here by Cuomo. He set out to do it in a methodical way. He knew what he was doing. This was planned. He knew that it would get a charge. He was not satisfied when Charles Smith spoke to him very, very lucidly, in a very intelligent way, a very composed way, very confident way. What did he say?
He was apologetic.
No, Charles, and in that interview, Charles kept saying and indicating that there was actually a crisis developing on the show, and it was the crisis developing because of the host deciding not to honor what the purpose of the program was. I played an interview between Richardson and a CNN reporter, and both, and I remarked, I analyzed it, both the reporter and the guest stayed on point. The reporter respected the reason the guest was there. The guest responded accordingly, even though it was filled with all kinds of opportunities for her to take on his answers, which was silly, to say that you're taking the chairman of Google along to get a broader perspective. Come on, we all know what that's about. But he was allowed to make that as an explanation for why he was going, because the major story there was, why would a former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., a former cabinet-level official in not one but two administrations, why would he flout the State Department's directive or suggestion that he postpone his trip? And he made his point quite clear. I'm a private citizen. I'm not an employee of the United States government. I can do what it is I need to do. I'm going on a private mission. Okay, great. But Cuomo methodically decided that he was not going to honor the stated purpose for the interview. I'm so clear. Nobody could even dispute that Rodman's conduct in the end was very embarrassing. Everybody, embarrassing for him, embarrassing for the players, embarrassing for the other black folks, embarrassing for people just watching, you know. But I know that if I had to list the order of offenses, Chris Cuomo's at the top.
But you
he's at the top.
I just want to say one
but
more question.
We have to move on fast. Make your point quickly, though.
Okay.
We have a long line.
The problem is, I think the bigger picture is that this government wants no connection with the people that is demonized. So Chris Cuomo, if you see Chris Cuomo as an agent of that, then we understand that, you know, all that this effort is to make sure that you close the door, like Robin was saying. You know, you close the door to any kind of connection so that we can all remain in the dark. So it's beyond Chris Cuomo. He's an arm of this situation. If they would have understood that, then they would have understood that they were walking into the line of fire and they had to defend themselves, but they had to attack, not just be on the defense. But anyway, thanks for the show. And
Thank you, Eric. Thanks for your contribution today. I really appreciate it. Thank you. We go to Hugh from Manhattan. You're on the air, Hugh.
You know, regarding the New Jersey road closing thing, there's something, aside from all the speculation of who did why and who was involved, and there's something that I thought was so simple, and it's absolutely true, but has not been addressed by anybody that I've heard. And it's namely that, I'm going to pose it by speculating on a situation that hasn't occurred. Suppose a bunch of winos or mental patients just released from the hospital were approached by an undercover FBI agent and given uniforms, you know, a little cash, maybe, you know, treated to McDonald's, and then told, you know, we want to do my name is Abdullah or something, and I want to, you know, perpetrate a terrorist act. Namely, we want to get together some Teflon liquid and pour it all over the highway and totally disrupt northeast traffic approaching the New York Bridge at Fort Lee. Now, we're going to plan this thing. I'm going to give you the tools. I'm going to give you the barrels of liquid Teflon. You know, this is the nonstick slippery stuff. And we're going to plan, and we're going to do this on this date and this date. And then suddenly it's revealed. Terrorist plot foiled in New Jersey. The point I'm making is that the disrupting or hurting, in this case, it could have been a disaster if there was a fire or a mass shooting and you know, ambulances couldn't get to, you know, to the accident. If in fact, if this had been done, it would have been an act against basically noncombatants for the purpose of hurting the government and hurting the officials, which is the very definition of terror. And my point is that what these guys did in New Jersey, so far we know that the aides to the governor, was by any reasonable definition, an act of political terror against, in this case, the people of Fort Lee, for whatever reasons. It doesn't even matter what reasons. It was an act of terror. And but it's not being described as such. If the FBI had talked some people into trying to do it, not doing it, but talked them in and then exposed them, they would be rotting in jail. The Governor Christie would be screaming for the National Guard to invade Fort Lee and find out who else might have been involved in this thing. It would have been a major thwarted terrorist incident. Only in this case, it actually happened. But all we're talking about is a little political retribution, and maybe they did this for this and this for that. And that is my basic point. And it's not a point of who did what or speculation. What was done was an act of political terror by absolutely any definition of the word. Yet it is not at all been addressed in that manner. And that is my point.
Thank you. Thank you for your contribution.
All right.
We'll go to Maryland. Madhu, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
I've been listening at your shows on the archives.
Well,
because I don't get a chance to call in and much, but I've listened to quite a few of them on weekends. I spent hours listening. But I wanted to comment on the part about Dennis Rodman. We wouldn't even be talking about it, really, if you hadn't brought it up. But several callers have said that he was responsible, that the players had power. Well, the players don't have power. I mean, if the players had power, the hosts would have had fear, enough fear to not even go in that direction of asking them those hostile questions that he agreed, you know, not to even talk to them about. Bill Clinton does not have to go around fearing that he's going to be ambushed in an interview. He has power. That's the difference.
Amen. That's my comment. Amen to that. That's the
thank
whole
you.
Point.
Thank you. I'll call in more when I get a chance.
Thank you so much for your call today. DX from L.A. Are you there? Oh, he's not there. Okay, we go to Daco from Brooklyn.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I agree with the caller and you that just spoke about us not having power. But let's take it down a notch. We as black people working, you know, having certain positions, even our president, do we really have power? It's like watching the interview. You know, we all know Dennis Rodman to be Dennis Rodman. I really wasn't embarrassed by him. I wasn't offended by him or anything. The guy, you know, is a simple guy like everybody else. He's into basketball, and he was humiliated. But what I was watching was how Charles Smith, very calm, very intelligent, very articulate, and he was basically answering the questions as best as he can. And he did a great job. But I noticed that the host just wanted to gear himself to Dennis Rodman because he's a weak link. That's what he thought. And then at the end, what hurt me the most was when they interviewed Chris Cuomo and he said that he doesn't care about... I mean, I couldn't believe he can even say that
exactly.
On national television. I'm saying
exactly.
to myself... Don't worry about what Dennis Rodman said. The man that came out, this is left field. He wasn't there for politics. You know, he's there just to, you know, represent the United States like a lot of African Americans do, you know, which we don't, it does hurt to see that we still don't get how this country works. You know, like when you were mentioning about, the other runner, why am I forgetting everything? It's been a long day. But
Jesse Owens?
Jesse Owens, yes. And how you explain how he's treated in the United States, but yet the person that gave him Revlon was Adolf Hitler, of all people. But mm-hmm. yet this man is not considered a human being in the United States. And this has been bothering me for a long time. How is it that we as Africans or black or Caribbean or whatever, we hate ourselves. We don't see what the real issue is, but yet we don't understand that we don't have any power. Like that thing is, when you're defending yourself as a black woman, what do they call you? An angry black woman. You have feelings, you're a human being, but yet they don't want to, if wrong is done to you, if things have been taken away from you and you're fighting back, what do you consider an angry black woman? And that's what I saw with Rodman. You know, it's the same thing. But yet, this man, Chris Cuomo, can say, I don't care about how he feels. I just said to myself, so you're allowed to say this on national TV?
You know, if that were said about any other person perceived as powerful, before he finished the sentence, the screen will go to some other commercial, and the next segment will proceed minus Chris Cuomo. You hit the nail on the head. That's why I played it. How could a person be allowed to say something like that and still continue? And the reason I played it was to say, here is the host himself. This is after the initial interview. He's now boasting and glowing, you know, in the glory of what he had accomplished as a host of that program where Rodman lost it. He confesses that, in fact, his mindset as he was doing the interview was one of absolute contempt for the person being interviewed. And that is what this passes muster. Nobody picks up on that. I said, amazing. You're having somebody on air. If this were a lawsuit, I mean, he made the case that the television station, the whole network CNN, basically employed somebody hostile to the guest and therefore provoked the guest. That's
exactly
really proof. That's what it is. Thank
and,
you so
and
much.
And this is how I see how, I mean, like I work in, you know, an area where you see this all the time. Like I said, there are people who don't, people of color that don't see this. They think everything is okay. But as you get higher up into the echelons of professionalism and you see how they despise you and having a certain position and the way you're able to articulate your ideas, have your ideas, and how they attack you, this, what I saw in the interview is exactly what they do to people of color who have certain positions. And then you're forced to decide, do I act upon it or do I play the game? And then do you lose yourself when you play that game? Or do you fight upon, I got kids to feed, I got a mortgage to pay. There's a lot of things that we as African people who don't have power have to play. So then how do we get power? What do we do? And this has been our problem for a long time since we've been in the United States.
Well, thank you so much. We have such a long line today, we can't get to all the calls. So what I'll do is we'll open up tomorrow to accommodate those who did not get on to voice their opinions today. This is very important, by the way. This is not just people taking calls and having their say. This is about consensus and how we view things that are happening that are just subjecting particular communities to inordinate suffering. And our job is to respond. I am under no illusions. With whatever has happened, I am real clear as to what the number one priority is. I am real clear as to the number one guilty network and the number one, but now they've spread it around a bit within CNN, so that CNN now has become the enemy in the way it has instructed its hosts and it has permitted its hosts to basically tear apart these people unrelentingly with no other motivation than to make sure they do not have the wherewithal to earn a living or to exercise their so-called American rights. I instruct people to look up the Dred Scott decision. It is the basis for understanding what motivates people to behave the way CNN and its alleged journalists are behaving. So we'll pick this conversation up tomorrow. I will also point out to you a triangulation that exists here that will blow your mind. Please pass the word about PRN.FM. Please pass the word about your favorite program on PRN.FM, and let's continue to discuss ways in which we should and can respond. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Wolff with Economic Update. You can always reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I am so privileged to be in your company today and every day. Bye-bye.